Okay, I want to echo everyone else in thanking Molly for organizing such an awesome meeting. So from early in our history, evolutionary biologists have thought of speciation in terms of this branching tree. But even at the time of Darwin, we realized that this was an oversimplification of the process of divergence between lineages. But as you've heard in talks today, I think it's only recently that we've come to like a full appreciation of how much of an oversimplification this was. And if we were to redraw this classic figure in evolutionary biology today, we might characterize it more like this, a sort of web of gene flow occurring before, during, and after divergence between lineages. And this is certainly the case in the species group that I have been focusing on, the swordtail fish, which are a group of freshwater fish found mainly in Mexico and Central America. And one of my first PhD projects really shaped the way that I've been thinking about this problem. So we were trying to infer relationships between species using a large number of gene trees. And in doing so, we saw really strong evidence for discordance that we ultimately concluded was due to gene flow. And this gene flow was operating on both historical and contemporary timescales, such that in some of the modern species that we were studying, upwards of 10% of the genome had been initially derived by from hybridization. And so this really pushed me to think about how hybridization sort of integrates with other ways that the genome evolves in trying to understand its role in evolution. And so in order to understand this, I think we need to focus on understanding what happens after hybridization. So one of the processes that we've heard a lot about are these sorts of genetic interactions that occur in hybrids and these conflicts between parental species genomes. But other factors that we need to consider are the ecological environments in which hybrids find themselves, as well as their ability to find mates and successfully reproduce. And today I'm just going to focus on these kinds of genetic interactions, but I don't want to ignore that this is happening in a much larger behavioral and ecological scenario. So the work that I'm going to tell you about today focuses on two closely related species of swordtail fish, Xiphophorus malinche and Xiphophorus bertramnii. These species are about 0.5% divergent on the sequence level, which is reflected also in their morphological, behavioral, and ecological divergence. They hybridize at intermediate elevations, and they actually hybridize in multiple river systems, which gives us a really nice tool to try to understand the predictability of hybridization. A lot of the data that we use to study these populations is local ancestry data, which Jenny gave a really nice introduction to. I'm happy to talk in more detail about the kinds of approaches we use, but just to give you a quick introduction, the basic approach we use to study most of these questions is we collect a fin clip from a natural hybrid, and we extract DNA, and we sequence to about 1x whole genome coverage. And then we map those reads to both the Malinche and Bertramnii parental genomes, and we make sort of a table of counts of reads at ancestry-informative markers that are fixed differences between the species, and then we apply a hidden Markov model to locally infer tracks that have been derived from each parental species. So here is shown a chromosome from an individual in our Tlatelolco population. You can see these chunks derived from the Bertramnii parent, those derived from the Malinche parent, and then these regions that are heterozygous in ancestry. And so this data set has allowed us to ask a lot of powerful questions about the history of the populations and selection on them. And one thing that came out of some of our early data was this observation that many of the populations we were looking at appear to have formed really recently. So as recombination occurs, it breaks down associations between, genetically linked sites. And so you can use the decay of admixture linkage disequilibrium over genetic distance with a lot of simplifying assumptions to try to understand when hybrid populations first form. And so when we apply these methods to our three different hybrid populations, we get estimates of initial admixture that are quite recent, between about 20 and 100 generations. And so this is really exciting to me, being interested in these early generations since hybridization as a way to sort of connect selection on hybrids early on to these genome-wide patterns of admixture that we see over longer timescales. And a lot of our work has focused on trying to understand the role of hybrid incompatibilities in this process. And so this has already been introduced, but the basic idea, which was independently proposed by Dobzhansky and Muller, is that you have this ancestral population that subdivides into daughter populations, and the daughter populations will accumulate and fix new mutations. And these mutations will either be neutral or advantageous within that genome. But if these species come back together and hybridize, you can have these negative interactions between these mutations that haven't been tested together before. And this model fits very well with a lot of observations in the literature, particularly observations about reduced hybrid viability and reduced hybrid fertility that have been mapped in lab organisms. But I've been very interested in trying to bring this to natural hybrid populations where we can understand its role in populations where these sorts of mechanisms of selection on hybrids are going to be very important. So we've done sort of a wide variety of work on this. One of the things that we did early on was try to identify pairs of loci that show sort of underrepresentation compared to what you would expect given the ancestry frequency at the two loci in that population. And using this kind of approach, in each of our three hybrid populations, we could identify a fairly large number of sites shown here on the swordtail genome that might be candidates for these kind of incompatible interactions. And we've been trying to push that further lately and now have a really nice time series data set spanning about 30 generations, 20 to 30 generations in three independent populations where we can track these loci over time and sort of see selection in action. And one of the other focuses that we've been using this data for is to try to understand how selection on these sites sort of remodels ancestry and neighboring sites along the genome. But today I'm going to tell you about work that's sort of a deviation from some of these genome-wide signals that we've been looking at and really focuses on a single hybrid incompatibility that we've been trying to understand in detail. And to tell you about this, I need to start off by telling you about a trait. This trait is called the spotted caudal. It's this collection of macromelanocytes that form on the caudal fin of Birchmanii. It's at intermediate frequencies in Birchmanii. It's completely absent in Malinche. And we noticed something interesting might be going on with this trait as we began to look in hybrid populations. We saw that the incidence of this trait were very high in hybrid populations. Especially given what we knew about the mixture proportions of those populations, we would have expected it to be at lower frequency. So this led us to speculate that there might be some kind of epistatic interaction between the Birchmanii and Malinche genomes that could increase the expression of this trait in some way. And indeed, as we look in sort of in more detail at the phenotypes themselves, we noticed something really different about the hybrid phenotypes compared to the Birchmanii phenotype. So in Birchmanii, the spot is always contained on the fin, and it never moves into the musculature in the body. And you can see that here in this phenotype that we've quantified as an invasion area. While in our hybrid populations, we see a lot of variation in this, but we do see a lot of evidence of movement of these melanocytes into the body. And in some cases, this can be quite extreme. So to show you an example of an individual from this population with a pretty extreme phenotype, I have an individual here from a Chihuahua Falls population. And we've now raised individuals in the lab, and we can actually track the progression of their phenotype from a very contained spot, like you see in Birchmanii, to this sort of expanding spot that's actually moving into the muscle of the caudal fin. And so we've been working to try to understand what's going on here with a really great group of molecular biologists. And what we see, if you take a histological cross-section here of the caudal peduncle, right where the muscle, right where it goes into the muscle, we actually see in these individuals with very advanced cases a lot of invasion of melanocytes and even invasion into the muscle bundles themselves. And over time, this will become more extreme and you'll actually see degradation of the muscle bundles. So this caused us to think that we're probably looking at a melanoma, especially what's known in other swordtail fish. We also did some gene expression comparisons for enriched pathways between individuals that had this invasive versus non-invasive phenotype of the same genetic background. And we see enrichment of a lot of pathways that are known to be involved in melanoma, as well as some sort of general cancer-related pathways. So we were then interested in trying to understand whether this is sort of a true hybrid incompatibility, and we could map the basis of it. So we took a couple of different approaches to try to get at the precise regions underlying this trait in Birch-Meyen hybrids. So our first approach was to try to identify the genetic basis of the spot, because individuals without a spot never develop melanoma. So that's an important piece of the puzzle. So the approach that we took here was to use basically a case-control GWAS, where we had about 200 individuals with the spot and about 200 individuals without. And then we basically scanned the genome for allele frequency differences between these two morphs. And in doing so, we see some signal elsewhere in the genome, but our strongest signal by far is on chromosome 21. And if we zoom in on that chromosome, we actually see that there are a couple of distinct signals here. So around 18 megabases and around 22 megabases. And what's quite interesting and immediately jumped out to us is that this peak, our stronger peak, contains only a single gene, which is the XMARC gene. And I just want to note that there's also an XMARC paralog over here, but it's not completely overlapping with our second peak. So why is this exciting? Well, Claudia gave a great introduction yesterday. We didn't coordinate, but the XMARC gene has been previously mapped as the genetic basis of a body melanoma that occurs when you cross two really distantly related species of swordtail fish. And it interacts, so it develops from speckles on the body, so it's a very different starting phenotype. You can see here a melanoma individual. And it interacts with an unknown region that they have called, in this classical work, the tumor suppressor gene in the other ancestry background. And the reason that I was so surprised about this is that Helleri and maculatus are deeply diverged species, and in turn are both quite diverged from Birch-Meyen Malinche. So it seems surprising to me that there was at least a partially shared genetic basis of this phenotype. So I'll return to that later, but I want to tell you next about our admixture mapping. With our admixture mapping, can then sort of move beyond the presence absence of the spot and look at the sort of aggressiveness of this expansion of the spot. The first thing we did want to do, though, was to confirm that the presence and absence was controlled by the same loci in Birch-Meyen as in hybrids. And so we first did map presence-absence, and we see in our admixture mapping results a single association on chromosome 21 in the same region that we identify these associations in Birch-Meyen. And this is associated with Birch-Meyen ancestry. So individuals that have Birch-Meyen ancestry are more likely to have the spotting phenotype. So we then turn to understanding the variation in phenotype that we see in hybrids, but not in the parental species. And so we then classified individuals as whether they had what we perceived as a Birch-Meyen spot, which is this contained spot, or individuals that actually had movement of the melanocytes into the body. So we call this an invasion phenotype. And so when we map this, we again see this region associated with Birch-Meyen ancestry on the same part of chromosome 21, but we now detect a second region associated with Malinche ancestry on chromosome 5. So this kind of pairing of Birch-Meyen Malinche ancestry in the trait suggests that we could be looking at sort of a classic hybrid incompatibility where combining these two ancestries leads to this deleterious phenotype. So if we look in more detail at the particular breakdown, what we can see, that becomes a little more clear. So what we can see is that individuals that have melanoma all have Birch-Meyen ancestry at chromosome 21, as well as Malinche ancestry on chromosome 5. And what's sort of striking to us in looking at this breakdown is we're actually able to see that just a single Birch-Meyen allele at chromosome 5 seems to be somewhat protective against this invasion phenotype, which is something we're excited to follow up on. So what's going on in this chromosome 5 region? Well, we ended up getting really lucky with this mapping because with admixture mapping of a population of this age, we wouldn't really expect to have a ton of resolution, but this happens to be in a very high recombination rate region of the genome, and it only contained two genes. So one of these genes is a fatty acid, and we've been able to show with our RNA-seq data that's ovary-specific. So we're now focusing on this other gene, which is a homolog of the human gene CD97. And we sort of immediately looked in our RNA-seq data that we had collected and saw that this gene was upregulated in individuals that had this invasion compared to individuals with normal or no spot, again, of the same genetic background. And as we dug into the human literature, we saw that this was sort of typical of cancers in general. So in this gene is expressed at very low levels in normal tissues, but is expressed at moderate or high levels in a number of cancers. And there's been some really nice recent work that has actually shown with genetic manipulations that this high expression of this gene is actually linked to the transition to metastasis. So we were really curious about whether there might be some evolution of higher expression of this gene in Malinche. And so we decided to tackle that with a qPCR-based approach. And what we see is, although there's quite a lot of variation in expression, we see markedly higher expression of this gene in Malinche. And if we move then to looking at F1 hybrids and some natural hybrids with melanoma, we again see this Malinche-like expression pattern, which suggests that hybrids could be inheriting this high expression of CD97, which we believe may be incompatible with having X mark on chromosome 21. One thing I just want to note is it appears that this is not a tissue-specific expression difference between the species. All the tissues that we have RNA-seq data from, we see this sort of constitutively higher expression in Malinche. Okay, so for the first part of my talk, I just want to sort of step back and say what I think is really interesting about this in part is that we see sort of a shared genetic basis of this melanoma incompatibility in these two really divergent crosses. However, it's only partially shared. We see the X mark gene in both cases, but the partners that we infer are different from those in the classical cross, and I'm happy to talk more about that. But I think it's really interesting to entertain this idea, which we have not anywhere close to enough evidence to really evaluate, that there might be certain genes that might be sort of susceptible to these breakdowns in hybrids, and we may begin to see more of these as we map more to the single gene level. Another feature of this system that I think makes it really unique and stand out from this classical work on melanomas and swordtails is these species are naturally hybridizing, whereas Helleri and maculatus do not naturally hybridize. And so that makes it really relevant to understand this trait in natural populations. And I'll also say another striking difference is that in Birchmeyer-Malinche hybrids, the melanoma develops early, whereas in Helleri maculatus hybrids, it may develop sort of post-reproductively. Indeed, we've been able to look at this in natural hybrid populations and try to begin to get a handle on what's going on. So we've been collecting juvenile and adult frequencies from two hybrid populations that have high incidence of melanoma over 3 years. And we see very consistent, although noisy, shifts in frequency of the trait between juvenile and adulthood. We do not see this in lab individuals, nor do we see it in the parental species where the spot exists but melanoma does not. And so we're really interested in the idea that there may be some sort of viability consequence of having this expanded spot that contributes to this drop-off between juveniles and adults. And we think there are a lot of possible causes of that viability difference, but one which we're currently pursuing with a really great group of Mexican collaborators is as the spot becomes really, the melanoma becomes really advanced, individuals start to lose parts of their caudal fin. So this is an individual who's lost a big chunk of her caudal fin. And we predict that this is going to have a big impact on swimming ability. But I just want to point out that far before you have this sort of fin loss, the invasion of the musculature in the caudal peduncle here may have an impact on swimming because it starts to degrade pretty early on. And one real puzzle that we're, I think, still really early in understanding is Why this trait is still present in the hybrid populations that we study, which I told you earlier, we estimate to be between about 20 and 100 generations old, depending on the population. If we take those juvenile and adult frequencies and make some simplifying assumptions about the genetic architecture, we estimate very strong selection coefficients that are consistent with that shift. Such that we would really expect that this trait should be efficiently purged from the hybrid populations by the time that we're sampling. So this is a sort of in spawning of a bunch of new projects to try to understand what forces might be maintaining it. The very last thing I want to talk to you about is the evolution of this trait in sort of the broader context of the swordtail phylogeny. And how the sort of pervasive history of hybridization might be influencing this trait. So we had previously found evidence of pretty ancient introgression from the species called Dipsophorus varietus into species in the Birch-Mimelinche clade, into all three of these species. And varietus is sympatric with all three of these species, so this seems plausible that we would have this gene flow. But another thing that really caught our attention for this project in particular is that Varietus, Cortezi, and Birchmeyer are the only three species in the clade that have tail spots. So many of the other species have spots on different parts of their body, but we thought that this gene flow from Varietus might be sort of an interesting mechanism to look at further. And just to sort of focus your attention, we don't find really strong evidence for this at the X-mark QTL, but if we focus on the second QTL, which I haven't told you much about, we actually see a really distinct pattern of relationships between species in this region. So we see that both Varietus and Cortezi are closely related to Varietus, both Cortezi and Birchmeyer are closely related to Varietus in this region, whereas other species that genome-wide are more closely related are outgroups. And this kind of discordance between the gene tree and species tree can be generated by a lot of processes, including hybridization and incomplete lineage sorting. But for incomplete lineage sorting, we would expect that the coalescence times between the Varietus and Cortezi and Varietus and Birchmeyer genes would be quite deep. And if we look at local divergence in this region compared to expectations based on coalescent simulations, we can see that both Birchmeyer and Cortezi are very closely related to Varietus in this region, whereas their sister clades or sister species, in the case of Malinche, are not and sort of fall within the expectation of divergence between Varietus and this northern swordtail group. So I think it's really exciting to think about whether this locus might be involved in the patterning we see, given that spots are found throughout the genus, but this tail spot patterning is only found in these three species. Okay, I'm going to end there by saying that I've told you a lot about this particular melanoma hybrid incompatibility that we've been working on, and I'm really excited about this work, but it's just a small part of the picture of the landscape of selection on hybrids. And I'm hoping that in coming years, in both swordtails and other species, we'll have a better understanding of these genetic mechanisms and how they influence evolution in the genome. I want to end by thanking the people who have really driven this work, particularly Dan Powell, who's starting a postdoc in my lab. Mackenzie Keegan did all of the wet lab work that I told you about today. And Mateo Garcia is a grad student who's been working on this. I also want to thank our collaborators on this project and also my mentors, two of whom I'm lucky to have in the audience today.